wonderful, majestic world around us, it's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
Kia ora, Marcus.
Kia ora, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good, thanks. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to be chatting with you again. I remember I was on Dear Science when I first started The Wire.
Long time ago.
So we've got a very packed Dear Science today, starting off with the scientific impact of Roe versus Wade being overturned.
Yeah, so most of you will have heard that after 50 years, the constitutional right to an abortion has been struck down in the United States. And on the 24th of June, the Supreme Court announced that it would overturn the 1973 decision called Roe versus Wade, which had protected abortion access up until the point that a fetus can live outside the womb, which is typically set at around about 22 or 24 weeks of pregnancy. And public health researchers have, there's you know, a minefield of topics related to this, but in particular, we're going to talk about the fact that public health research has renewed warnings about the harms that this decision will bring to the US, people in the US. And it's the outcome's maybe not a surprise. A draft opinion was leaked a few months ago in May. But it's disappointing that the majority of the opinion has swung so strongly against abortion, and the effects of this are going to be wide-ranging, to say the least. There's a few topics here, but there's thing I want to talk about is really the fact that a substantial proportion of people who want abortion services but don't have access to them will end up carrying their pregnancies to term. And the consequences of this have been documented thoroughly by research. And one of the most comprehensive studies examining the effects of abortion access is something called the Turnaway Study, which was an effort that followed about 1,000 U.S. women for about 5 years after they sought abortions, either received or denied them. Showed that women denied an abortion were more likely to live in poverty afterwards than those who received one. It showed that those who denied an abortion were more likely to report not having enough money to cover their living expenses over the 5 years than those who did not give birth. Women who were unable to receive the procedure also fared worse in areas such as education and physical and mental health. Once people who are denied an abortion go through the experience of giving birth, they rarely choose to place the child for adoption. And this means that poor families will have kids before they're ready. And all the health and economic costs that are documented in this study will happen to these people. So there is currently more work underway to investigate what will happen to the people denied an abortion. But this is definitely wide ranging. Another big obstacle is that of travel. So currently, they estimate within a few months of this decision, about 54% of U.S. women seeking abortions will have to travel further than they would have previously to reach their nearest abortion provider. So it's predicted that about 26 states in the U.S. will ban abortion, and so that's about half the number of states in the country. And so whereas currently women have to travel on average about 50 or 60 kilometers from home to get an abortion, that's going to increase on average to about 450 kilometers. And based on what we know about how women respond to traveling distance, about three quarters of them are still going to manage to get out and reach a provider, but a quarter of them won't. And this quarter represents the poorest and most vulnerable people. The final consequence is that people might try to end their pregnancies without clinical supervision. There are abortion medications, which are, according to WHO, at least safe and effective. But the problem is many people don't know much about the abortion medications. And And studies have shown that, especially among transgender, non-binary, and gender-expansive people in the U.S., one in five people in their study who had ever been pregnant tried to self-manage an abortion. And unfortunately, very few people are reporting this. And the reported things like physical trauma, inserting objects into the vagina, and ingesting substances that are harmful can lead to very serious medical consequences. People have also been prosecuted for self-managing their abortion, and some laws have been applied outside of their intended scope to criminalize people who have done this. So overall, the consequences of this ruling are going to be wide-ranging, very often terrible,
and really affecting the most vulnerable people.
And really affecting the most vulnerable people, absolutely.
And also just maintaining the cyclical nature of poverty that just keeps... that they really do in the US, which is very scary to see.
It is very scary, yes.
But yes, oh, it's so sad.
It is.
But moving on, we have a gravitational wave radar.
Something completely different.
Something very different. Something yes. A bit lighter, perhaps, ironically.
A little bit lighter.
Speaking about gravity.
Yeah. Again, many of you may have heard that... we now have the ability to use what are called gravitational waves to look at the universe. And this is basically a new way of seeing our reality, a new way of seeing what's out there. And these gravitational waves are born from massive objects like black holes and neutron stars that crash into each other and orbit and create these big disturbances in space. And these gravitational waves are literally waves in space that very, very tiny, but they are detectable, but they basically expand and contract the space around us. And people have been doing this for a few years now, and they've seen dozens and probably hundreds of these events where these objects have collided and formed these gravitational waves. But people are starting to think about other ways that these waves could be formed or generated. And one way is just like if you're in a cave or something like that, or in an echoey room, you make a sound and that sound hits a wall and comes back at you. Gravitational waves can behave in a similar way. So they can bounce off massive objects, and instead of coming straight towards you, they can bounce off an object and sort of take a sort of diverted route and then reach you a fraction of a second after the original sound. And so these are tests of general relativity. This is Einstein's famous theory, and according to general relativity, these should be observable. Initially, people thought that gravitational waves wouldn't have much of an echo, especially if they bounced off a very point-like object like a black hole. But it turns out that massive objects like huge stars, neutron stars, things that have actually volume, it turns out that they could generate these waves. And so people are going to start to look. And it turns out, sort of a survey turns out that roughly one in every 220-ish gravitational waves that people observe should be accompanied by an echo that's about a third of the intensity. So the cost for looking for these is pretty small, but the payoff could be large in terms of understanding a little bit more about the universe and making sure Einstein was right.
Wow.
Maybe
Einstein was right.
he usually was.
Science is a wonderful thing. Which takes us on to our final topic of today, which is the electrical stimulation of the brain, helping people with stutters.
Yeah, so we've all probably met someone who has a stutter, or we may stutter occasionally ourselves or have a serious problem, but it's estimated about 1% of the world's adult population, so about 70 million people, is thought to stutter. And the effects of that, it can impair quality of life. It can cause, obviously, social distress and stigma. But the causes of stuttering are still pretty poorly understood. And currently, the only available treatment is speech therapy, which can improve fluency to some extent and help avoid the side effects of stuttering, such as involuntary movements and tics. But its success rate is limited in adults, and it fails to address the roots of the problem, which are probably neurological. So like treating stuttering with speech therapy is like treating Parkinson's disease with physiotherapy. You're not really getting to the cause of the problem. So some scientists in Spain have come up with a non-invasive brain stimulation method, which stimulates or inhibits neurons in specific brain regions in an effort to remodel the circuits of these interconnected cells. And it's already shown benefits for diseases like depression, particularly in people who are resistant to drug treatments, and in stroke rehabilitation, where it can help improve movement and speech. And the hypothesis is that performing tasks while or immediately after electrical stimulation can help reshape these sort of troublesome circuits in the brain. And although there's some slight discomfort with the electrical currents in this treatment, this non-invasive stimulation is widely considered safe. And so this method is called transcranial magnetic stimulation, in which a magnetic field is applied through a small coil placed in the head of the participant, and then that induces a small electric current in the brain. And this coil is only a few millimeters wide, and you can really target a very precise brain area. And this differs from another method that has been used in the past. Some neurophysiologists at the University of Oxford were the first to treat people who stutter with another technique called transcranial direct current stimulation, which passes electrical current from one side of the brain to the other, but the electrodes for that are much bigger. It's much harder to make a specific change in a smaller part of the brain. But nevertheless, these treatments in double-blind testing, 30 participants to whom this treatment was applied, stimulated, the aim was to stimulate a certain region, the left inferior frontal cortex, and that which is shown to reduce activity, or shown to have reduced activity in people who stutter. And the benefits were statistically significant, but modest. So after 1 week, participants who received the brain stimulation stuttered 8% of their syllables, down from 11% at baseline. A different study showed that there was a change from about 8.5% to 5.4% after stimulation. So there's a small benefit, but it's definitely something that people are looking into and hopefully can be used to treat this affliction.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. That seems to be some very exciting research going on there. I don't know. I catch myself stuttering sometimes and I'm like, oof.
I stutter all the time.
It seems like almost a human affliction sometimes.
It is.
We had a text come through about the first story you covered about the scientific impact of Roe versus Wade, saying that the unfortunate thing is that the white Christian conservatives will never listen to researchers or science. All they care about is staying in power and continuing to oppress those who can't use their voice, which unfortunately, as this sort of conversation has come to the fore again, and we're hearing more from researchers and more from scientists about, I mean, basically saying exactly what you were saying at the start of the piece, that just unfortunately seems to be ringing truer and truer. And you start to think maybe it's not a question of sort of ethics, and it is a question of power at the end of the day, which is sad. Sorry to take it back to that.
No, it is. It is sad. I mean, I lived in the States for 20 years, and I lived in North Carolina. North Carolina, many of the states have these trigger laws. So as soon as this ruling was made, they triggered these automatic bans. Ooh. North Carolina thankfully didn't, although I suspect it may go that way anyway. It sort of swings Republican every so often, or very quite conservative.
Yeah,
it's really upsetting. It was good to hear that there are some major companies, Amazon, what's the Google company now? I can't remember.
Meta.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They're gonna as part of their health insurances, they're gonna pay pregnant women to, if needed, to travel to an abortion clinic if they happen to be unavailable in the state that they're living.
Exactly. And I think, yeah, someone else has just texted in about sort of this decision being based on religious ideals, and it's kind of like you step back and remember that there's meant to be a separation of church and state. So,
yeah,
that's interesting. But did have an interesting conversation on the Drive show last night with Professor Peter Lineham about the religious dimensions to the overturning of Roe v. Wade. So you should go back and check that out if you are interested. Thank you very much for today, Marcus.
Well, thank you.
I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.